Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Paranexus Universe. My name is Gregory Kent. I'm your host for Psychic Perspective. We are very happy this evening to have two guests. Our first guest I'd like to introduce is Jamie Best, the writer, psychic medium, and also Chris McGill, producer and director. And they're coming on the show this evening to talk about The Spirits of Bourbon Country. It's a film that's coming out later in the year. A month or so, if I believe is correct, and it's set in the historic Bardstown, Kentucky. Jamie, how are you doing this evening?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. Chris, how are you?
Doing fine tonight. Thanks, Gregory.
Excellent. Jamie, tell us about the film.
We visited Bardstown, Kentucky, and there's three locations, or, you know, let's see. Chris usually does the film introduction. I'm a little stumped here.
That's fine. Chris, jump in. Tell us about the film.
Well, as Jamie was saying, it's based in Bardstown, Kentucky, which is about 30 miles south of Louisville. And the film is encompassing, of course, Bardstown. Probably should tell right off the bat. It's a very old town in Kentucky. It's really the second oldest city in the state. So it dates back well into the 1600s, 1700s. And there's been many stories over the years about hauntings in and around Bardstown. And through the past several years, I've been working in the paranormal and with the local group here in Louisville. I was introduced to a Patty Starr, who some of you may be aware of from Ghost Chasers International. And Patty and I got together and thought of an idea to do a documentary film on some of the hauntings that have been reported in Bardstown. And this first film was actually going to be focusing on three different locations, the historic Talbot Tavern, also the Jailer's Inn, which was actually the old Nelson County Jail back in the late 1700s and early 1800s, and the Chappies House, which was a private residence. It's now an event house, but its history goes back to about 1780, 1790 as well. So we visit all three of these locations. In the film, you'll hear firsthand accounts from owners and visitors of these locations as to what has happened to them there. We give the history of the location, and then Patty comes in, Patty Starr, and she does an investigation. And Jamie is our writer and psychic medium, of course, and she also gives her aspect of what she senses at each of these locations as well. So we kind of give you an overview of these three particular spots in Bardstown, and hopefully if people like the film, there'll be more to come, hopefully, down the road.
Jamie, you're good at that, right?
Now, Jamie, you could have done the exact same thing. I am going to put your website for everyone to look at in the chat room. Give me just, there it is. Please visit the website. I was watching the trailers today for the film, and it really looks like it's going to be an exciting film about the hauntings. Bardstown's very small, isn't it? About 10,000 people.
Yeah, it's a very small town, and it's really, when you visit Bargetown, you almost kind of feel like you go back in time a bit, because most of the buildings there, you know, obviously there's very modern buildings as well, but a lot of the architecture in Bargetown is just as it was back in, you know, the 1800s and late 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
The city's done a great job of preserving the history of that town and preserving the historic buildings that are there. So it's a very neat, quaint little town if you want to visit. Plenty of, you know, bed and breakfast such as Jailer's Inn, great place to stay. So it's got a lot of history there.
Now, do the locals embrace the historical significance and the spirits, the ghost aspect, or what's their take on it?
For the most part, the people that we talk to there do embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, no matter where you go, you're going to find your skeptics. Doesn't matter how much proof mm-hmm. you have, they're never going to believe. But for the most part, people embrace it, and it is, you know, it's a revenue-producing industry to the fact that Patty does ghost tours in Bargetown almost year-round. So that brings a lot of tourism into the town as well.
So Patty's from that area also?
I'm not sure if Patty's originally from Bargetown. She worked there for years as the general manager for the Talbot Tavern, which stopping spot for, you know, everyone from Abraham Lincoln to Jesse James. So she was the manager there for years. Yeah.
Well, Chris, let me ask you a question. As a producer and director, how do you set up to film something people can't see? You know where I'm going?
Yeah. It's my personal view on that is I want to tell the story as it has happened to the people who've experienced it.
Okay.
You know, this is not a film where you're going to have an overabundance of special effects. We don't do that. There will be some recreations to kind of better give the viewer an understanding and experience of what someone has experienced themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But this is pretty much straightforward. You know, we're given the history of the location to give people the background of what that particular business or home has been over the years, what might be the, you know, reason for a particular haunting. And then, you know, Patty and Jamie kind of add Patty takes the scientific approach with scientific equipment she uses. I'm not sure if you can really officially say scientific, since science hasn't proven life after death or ghosts, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting to use Patty's aspect and then Jamie, because she senses things that are there. And if Jamie tells us, well, I'm sensing something's happening here, and then, you know, a meter, or we catch something on camera, you know, something happens immediately after, kind of helps to validate that.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually happened several times when we were there. So,
well, give us some examples, Jamie, what happened.
At one point, I think probably one of the coolest things was we were at the Talbot in the upstairs, and you know, we were doing the investigation and asked, you know, for something to show itself. And, you know, pretty much on command, we had an orb, you know, actually go spiral around Patty's leg. And we caught that. It's really neat. You know, it was hard to dismiss as dust because it was so, you know, on command. You know, we asked for something and it delivered like straight away. So that was really cool.
Now in the trailers, the film trailers, they show Patty with, does she have an EMF meter in her hand and she's asking for contact to be made and the EMF automatically goes off? Is that what I'm seeing?
Yeah, that happened a couple of times, and we did catch some EVPs down there as well. And that was, I thought was kind of interesting too. Where, and Patty, she had several items she was using. She's actually a gentleman who I'm sorry, but I can't remember his name right now, actually designs a lot of that type of equipment, research equipment for paranormal investigators such as Patty, and she gets to test a lot of that before it hits market. So
mm-hmm.
it's kind of interesting to see some of those meters light up or make a sound of some sort that they're detecting something, whether it's a change in the atmosphere or whatever. And then, you know, have something else validate that as well and go off. And there's more of those trailers. Those, basically, I just kind of put those together as we were going through the editing process to kind of give a little taste of each location, and we'll have more that will be going up with some more interesting things that happened during the filming process too.
Now, Jamie, when you go out onto the location, being psychic, medium, sensitive, whatever you like to, whatever people are comfortable calling you, other than your psychic ability or your sensitivity, do you also use scientific equipment?
Oh, sure. I've worked with a couple of different paranormal research teams, and you know, I have my voice recorders and, you know, whatever other equipment, you know, night vision on the camera and things like that. I like to have that validation. It's still, to me, I still surprise myself a lot, you know, like I am always excited when, you know, there's something on equipment that matches, you know, what I'm feeling, you know, just validates that for me. So it never gets old. I get excited, and I'm just as surprised every time that, you know, I picked it up. So, yeah.
Well, it is very nice to have that validation, because being a psychic medium myself, a lot of people don't get us. They don't see what we see. They don't feel what we feel. So having some sort of validation kind of helps them to understand what's going on in our world, correct?
Yes, exactly. And then you still have people that still don't, you know, they don't believe you, so.
Well, let me delve into your past, Jamie, if I may.
Sure.
When did you first realize, obviously you didn't know you were psychic as a child, but when did it all start coming together for you?
Well, I can't ever remember not being psychic.
Okay.
My mother has stories that, you know, I told her that happened to me when I was, you know, two and able to verbalize something that I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there wasn't really any sort of support structure in place for that. So, you know, I was told that I was dreaming or lying or, you know, mm-hmm. I imagined it or, you know, a lot of that. And so, you know, after a few years, I've learned to just keep my mouth shut. And I guess I was probably about 10 or 11 years old before I actually figured out, oh, okay, I kind of see what's happening here. You know, I watched enough TV, read enough books, whatever, you know, it finally clicked what was going on and how I was different than all of the other people around me. And living here in the Bible Belt, you know, there's some, it's not as accepted through here. You know, I still have to be a little careful, you know, with my other jobs and my other sides of my life, you know, with bringing this part of my world in just because it mm-hmm. isn't widely accepted here. So.
So did you ever come across someone that would help you develop, or did you just develop on your own? How did this unfold?
Well, what happened was when I had my first son 7 years ago, it only took a few months of him being alive to figure out that he clearly had some pretty significant abilities. And I just figured I had to either accept it and develop it. You know, I didn't want him to have the same childhood that I had. I didn't
exactly.
want him to feel alone. I didn't want him to feel, you know, like nobody believed him. And it was just not a really fun way to grow up. So I decided to embrace it and go with it and be the best support to him that I could. And since then, I've gotten another one, too. So it's we have a house full of us over here.
Well, how is your son progressing with the ability?
Really well. He went through a few years of being very, very anxious about it. A lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, you know, to the point to where we would have to sit outside the bathroom door, you know, if he was in the bathroom because he was terrified to be alone. You know, he slept mm-hmm. with the lights on for years. You know, we've worked on a lot of protecting and, you know, him, you know, learning how to put his foot down and push things away when they need to be pushed away. So he's adjusting. He's definitely adjusting. And there's times that he thinks that it's fun. You know, he finds these little abilities that he can do, and we make it a game. You know, we make it we make it as fun as we can so that, you know, mm-hmm. everybody's having a good time with it and we're not all stressing about it all the time.
Just making him feel comfortable and that it's a natural ability.
Right.
Something we did not have as children.
No, not at all.
Because I remember my parents telling me that when I was a child, I was real fearful about the people who visited me at night. And I think somehow I started to block everything. And it's really not a good place to go, blocking. But my parents didn't know anything about psychics or mediums or anything of that nature, so they didn't really know what to do with me. So they sent me to the psychiatrist. That didn't help.
Right.
Chris, let me ask you, working with television, are you an anchor man or producer, director for WAVE in Louisville?
I'm anchoring the morning traffic reports and also reports and do news anchoring as well.
What do your colleagues think about everything going on in your little side job?
Most people are very open to it. They find it to be very interesting. Obviously, you get a lot of weird looks from people, and they say, you know, my hobby is building models. What do you do? And I say, well, I'm investigating paranormal activity. you get a lot of odd looks sometimes. They don't promote it very much, but overall, it's been very, you know, people have been very nice about it. And there's actually more, I think, open-minded people out there than we think. Mm-hmm. Although, as you and Jamie were just talking about, there's still a lot of people who just refuse to open their minds up to the fact that there may be something else out there that we don't understand yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just think about for centuries, people saw lightning in the sky. Electricity exists. Doesn't mean you can actually physically reach out anytime you want and touch it, but it does exist, even though you can't see it all the time.
Exactly.
So I'm hoping that as we get, you know, here we are in the 21st century, as we move forward, that people will begin to at least open their minds a little bit more about that. And, you know, I never try to, through the film work I've done, this will be the second one on this particular subject, you know, my point is not to try to convince anyone of anything. The goal is just to tell people the story of what other people experience and then let the viewer, whoever sees it, make up their own mind.
Mm-hmm. Is the film coming out, is it coming out on DVD for sale, or is it going to be on cable, national, or how is that presenting itself?
Yeah, we are first releasing it on DVD for sale.
Okay.
If anyone would love to carry it, we'd love to talk to them, but it is going out just for sale on DVD.
And when could we see that? When will that be ready?
We're hoping that's going to be out no later than the 1st of October. We're in the final editing stage of the project right now. So we're shooting for the first part of October. And we have, of course, on the website, we'll keep people up to date as to when the actual release date is. But right now we're looking at the first part of October.
Excellent. Chris, while I've still got you, let me remind the people in the chat room or the people listening that feel free to call in. We'd love to take callers. The number 347-945-7799. If you'd like to call in and ask questions of Jamie or Chris, John was asking Chris, we were talking about Mrs. Starr and the equipment she's using. He asked, is Bill Chappelle the one who's designing that equipment? Are you aware of who's designing the equipment she's using?
You know, that name sounds very familiar to me. It very well be, but I don't have his name right here in front of me, so I wouldn't say for sure of that. We will be getting that information from Patty, though, and I will have that in the credits of the film when it's done. Because she's using some things that are, you know, to people who aren't familiar with ghost hunting, if you call it that, and I hate that term, but that's what a lot of people refer to it as.
Mm-hmm.
Remarkable pieces of equipment. How they work, I still, you know, boggles my mind. But some of the piece of equipment that Patty used during the filming of this project. You know, it was, as Jim mentioned earlier, it was very ironic that a sensor would go off and then we'd see something or hear something on a recording, you know, after we went back and listened to it again. And I'm by far not a scientist, so I'm not sure how that even works or how, you know, people design that equipment, but it's very intriguing to see it work.
Can you give us some examples of the EVPs of what was said?
Well, one example was in the basement of a Chappie's house. Now, this is the what's being used now as an event house. Was once it's named after Henri Chappie's. I think he was a Frenchman. Henri Chappie was the way I guess they pronounced it in French. But he came to America around the time of the Revolutionary War. He was originally part of the Revolutionary troops with George Washington, and settled in Bargetown. So this gentleman was a doctor, so he treated a lot of people there. And, of course, back in those days, the late 1700s, early 1800s, the Chappie's family had several slaves, and they actually made the cellar of the home for the slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie had some very emotional experiences down there she can talk more about. But we received several occurrences down there during the filming process, and this process took several months to actually go back and film different parts and so forth. But one evening we were there, and one of Patty's EMF meters went off, indicating something in the atmosphere was changing at that point, electromagnetic wise. And she was asking questions as to if someone was there. And after going back and listening to it, you hear a voice, clean as day, come through. And of course, on that recording, we could hear the beep of the meters go off right before this happened. So, you know, it would lead one to think that, you know, possibly that those two incidents were related.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there's no concrete way to prove it, but it's very ironic that they happened so close together. So that kind of made me think that, well, you know, maybe it did pick up something before it actually happened. And there were several instances like that that happened elsewhere.
Could you determine what they were actually saying?
It sounded more like I'm here.
Uh-huh.
As if, you know, someone was trying to let us know that, yeah, they were indeed there.
Excellent.
There were other EVPs we received that, you know, it depends on, you could have 10 people listen to them and they'll come through with 10 different things they think they hear.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's really kind of hard to determine what exactly was said, but we did find out that it was, you know, it definitely wasn't us, and it sounded like a voice coming from somewhere.
Chris, do you consider yourself psychic?
Not at all. I think I'm sensitive because I've been around it so long.
Okay.
And I've been dear friends for many years, and I have another very good friend who is also very sensitive, who really kind of got me interested in this area back years ago when I was much younger. And he told me back then, he goes, the more you're interested in it, the more you open yourself up to it, you know, you can become psychic or become sensitive to things, because according to him, everyone has that ability.
Absolutely.
It's just not everyone knows how to use it. But we've been on cases before where recently we went to a home in LaGrange, Kentucky, and for some reason, as soon as we got there, I started getting pictures of these people, and I just threw them out there, and come
mm-hmm.
to find out one of the little girls there, it kind of matched the description of what she had been seeing. So I'm not ready to say I'm psychic, but maybe I am picking up on things at times.
Well, I think if you don't want to say you're psychic, you're very open-minded about it, and you go in with your clear thinking, and whatever happens, happens. You don't go with any predetermined whatevers that's going to cloud any judgment. Correct?
That's the way I try to be. Right. Exactly.
Jamie,
I've always been told not to second guess myself. You know, whatever you sense the first time usually is right.
Isn't
that
true?
Tell you that's true or not. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're taking a exam or searching ghost. Whatever your first thought is probably correct.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie, you're clairvoyant. Clairsentient? Clairaudient? Which one? All the clairs?
I would call myself a medium before anything else, because most of my dealings, it seems to be with earthbound folks that are stuck here for whatever set of reasons they have. I have had, you know, some clairaudience and, you know, instances of those things. I don't have anything that's like, this is how it is. It just kind of shows up for me however it shows up for me. Very empathic. You know, like Chris was saying, I had some emotional responses. I mean, that's how I generally process the information is through emotion. But I do hear things. I do see things. You know, there's been times that, you know, I've seen people as clear as I see everyone else, and I have to gauge everyone else's reaction, you know, to see if nobody else seems to notice them, then, okay, that person must, you know, not be among the living. Mm-hmm. So it just, however it shows up, it shows up.
So when you go into places, do you do any of the historical background check first, or do you go in first, then do the background?
Right. Yeah. I prefer to have absolutely no information. That tends to taint things for me. I don't trust myself as much if mm-hmm. I have any kind of previous information about anything. I can't trust the information that I'm getting, because the brain holds a lot of information, and I'm not really sure if how I'm getting that information. I hate to think that I'm pulling information out that I already had. I would mm-hmm. much rather know that I don't have the information and then see what's up.
Okay, that's fair enough. Question, I'm going to say from the audience. I'm watching three or four different screens, and I'm not sure if y'all are seeing the same screens. Doug had asked, how do you recommend to people how to develop their psychic abilities? Or what would you say? What would you say if someone came up and said, Jamie, I think I'm psychic, or I think something's going on. How can I hone in on those experiences, or how can I increase my ability? What would you say?
Well, the way that I always explain it to people is, you know, use the radio analogy. Everybody's just walking energy. We're all made of the same stuff. And you're just like a radio receiver. It just happens to be that, you know, everybody's channels are tuned to different stations, and you're free to change a channel at any time. And I know that's easier said than done, but the way that I have done it, you know, once I embraced it and decided to just, you know, go all in, I just try things. You know, I try skills. You know, I try lucid dreaming. I try mediumship. I try, you know, whatever, you know, remote viewing, you know, whatever comes up. And if some things come because of however my frequency is tuned, some things come easier than others. And if something comes a little easier than something else, then that's what I practice and I practice and I practice. And it just gets better, you know, the more time you spend with it. And, you know, like Chris said, the more you're around it, the more you're open to it. You know, it just kind of, mm-hmm. it feels natural, you know?
So you don't look at it as some supernatural ability. It's just what naturally comes to you.
Right. Now, I don't understand why some people like myself are more naturally tuned. Mm-hmm. I was born this way. I don't know why. It's not like I asked for this skill. It just kind of was bestowed upon me. I think everybody, if you understand how energy moves and energy works, you know, and understand that everything's connected, then it stands to reason that anybody can change their channel.
Mm-hmm.
It just takes a little bit of practice and some time.
Meditate, meditate, meditate was a comment in the chat room. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to turn off the mind and the chatter. And sometimes for me to sit and meditate and to know I'm sitting and meditating, it just gives me the everything just starts flowing in, as in, okay, what am I going to do tomorrow? What am I going to take my car in? You know, everything I need to do, it's like, okay, I'm free to think about everything I have to do instead of clearing my mind and talking to spirit. So it's discipline is a good word. Just have to be disciplined about it.
Definitely.
So, Chris, what do you think?
I'm pretty much on board with that, too. I've always been taught, you know, that if you open yourself up to it, one thing, there's always a safety factor. If you're not sure what you're doing, don't do it. Find someone who does know the ropes, so to speak. And that's what I do. If I'm in a location and I'm attempting to try to pick up something, I just try to calm myself down. But you're right. Your daily events come through your mind, and you just have to be, I guess, disciplined enough to clear your mind out. And then, as we said, just, you know, whatever comes to mind, just go with your gut instinct on it, and maybe it's right. But I think it's important to mention to people, too, who, I mean, there's a lot of people, the paranormal is so popular nowadays. I think there's a lot of people who are trying to get into it and try to find ghosts, try to communicate. And, you know, not necessarily is it a dangerous thing, but at times it can be if you don't know what you're doing. So I think it's important to say just be careful and go into that with someone who is familiar with it, or make sure you do your research before you try.
Now, Chris, is Jamie working on you and your abilities?
We have a little bit, yeah. We've done some testing and so forth. She kind of knows what I'm going to say before I say it a lot of times. But
saves you a lot of time, doesn't it?
Yeah, saves me a lot, yeah.
How long have you known each other?
I'll go ahead. Yeah, actually, we do have some family friends in common, but we actually started working together with the paranormal stuff when I guess 7 years ago, because my oldest was just a baby, and Chris's paranormal research team actually came to my house because my house is a revolving door of ghosts. And they came out to do an investigation out here, and, you know, it kind of started this just fun little working relationship that we have and shared interest and good time.
Well, why do you call yourself the reluctant medium?
Well, because I spent a great deal of time doing everything I could to make this go away. I spent, you know, once I figured out what's going on, of course, there's always that stigma attached, you know, I get that label stuck on me that I'm some kind of freak or something. So, you know, you go through high school, you don't want people thinking you're a freak. So, and I held so tightly onto that, and just refused to let it go until, you know, I had my son. So And actually, what happened was my husband decided that I needed to start just a personal blog as a diary of sorts. It wasn't necessarily for, you know, any money or attention or anything like that. It was just I had all these experiences to share, and we decided that the Reluctant Medium was a very good title for what I was, because I always said, no, this is not what I do. It's just something about me. It's not who I am. It's just something that happens to me. Since then, obviously, I've, you know, accepted and moved on from the reluctant part, but the title kind of stuck and just too late to change it now.
Oh, what does your husband think of all this, and what is his role?
He spent a lot of time thinking that this was just a crazy little quirk that he was going to have to put up with. He did not believe me. He thought that I had some level of mental illness, that I was hallucinating, but was otherwise a seemingly functioning person. So, you know, but after the kids were born, and there were just so many things that he just couldn't explain, you know, one after another, that eventually he just kind of caved and said, okay, you know, I get it. You're telling the truth. Got it. So he's been much more supportive of, you know, going out with paranormal teams and things like that, you know, since he's accepted that this is indeed how it is.
So your first date, you didn't touch psychic or I'm a medium?
No.
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 You waited to the second or third date, right?
No.
No.
Quite some time.
That's funny. What other locations have y'all investigated?
Oh, we've been to quite a few private residences around Louisville and a lot in LaGrange, Kentucky as well, which is just a little bit northeast of Louisville. That town, I think, is up there with Bardstown as far as the number of reported hauntings. The town actually lies on, what I've been told, is a major underground spring there. And some people believe that has a little bit to do with conducting or at least adding the energy for things such as ghost activity to happen. And we've done several, it seems like almost every year around Halloween, September, October, we're asked to go conduct some investigations for the town. It's kind of an event they provide not only for the residents but for tourists as well. We've had some very interesting locations. One particular building used to be, I believe, an old pharmacy years and years ago. Jamie became, she can tell you more about this, but she became very attached, I guess, to one of the ghosts there, and then one of them became very, let's just say, wasn't very nice. Yeah. We actually took a group of people with us one night to go on an investigation there, and one girl was actually slapped and hit, and that's the first time I've ever been with a group where something like that happened before. So it was nerve-wracking, to say the least. Keep my fingers crossed. I haven't been in many of those situations.
You don't want to show up and be slapped around, huh?
No.
No, I would prefer not. And hopefully Jamie picks up on that kind of energy before it even gets anywhere near me. So,
how would you describe that energy? Just a mean, earthbound spirit or someone trying to get your attention or what? How would you describe that person?
Well, there was two up there. Like you said, there was one that became what everyone affectionately referred to as my friend. You know, very nice ghost, very happy to see us every time we were there. Then there was the other one that, you know, I knew when he was around, had that, you know, that really, I don't want to say nervous because it's not really, you know, just kind of feel it in the pit of your stomach, you know, like something's just off. And it was like that a few times when we went up there, and every time it got stronger and stronger until eventually it did become physical with us. I was kicked a couple times along with some other people that were up there with us, and it became quite menacing. It would, you know, it would hover around us. We'd see dark shadows circling us at times. And it, like you said, it became pretty aggressive with one of the guests that we had with us. And I don't know, I call it when I get an ice pick to the brain, like that horrible, like, psychic pain in my head. And it got me so badly once that, you know, I fell to my knees and actually yelled out. I mean, it was pretty intense. So that was the last time I went up there. And it will probably be the last time I will ever go up there.
So when the spirit physically attacked you or attacked the other person, did it leave a mark? A visible mark on your body? Yeah, it
left a mark and blood. So it was not, it wasn't major, but it was a cut. And there was nothing, we went back to that location. First, just a couple of us, Jamie, myself, and the lady who was actually conducting the tour for the city. We three went back, looked at the location where this happened. There was nothing we could find that this young lady had walked into, fell into, because everyone was seated at the time this happened. But she had a scratch on her arm, and it took her, I believe, several weeks to get over that.
I would think so. Jamie, could you tell who it was or what they looked like?
You know, I don't know who it is or who he was. He seemed very attached to the building. Very, very large. You know, I knew he was, you know, over 6 feet tall, quite mm-hmm. wide. But I actually wasn't in the room when she was attacked. I was actually in another building, and oddly enough, I was literally across the street in another building, and we were conducting an EVP session over in the other building, and all of a sudden you have this pool and you just have to go. I mean, I literally jumped up out of the chair like my butt was on fire, took off running through the rain. It was pouring rain that night. Ran as fast as I could over there, and I'm still about halfway there. It finally occurs to me, like, why am I doing this? I have no idea why I'm doing this. And, you know, I knew the door was going to be locked when I got there, and the second I ran up on that back door and I pounded on it as hard as I could because I knew they were going to be upstairs, and they, you know, in order for them to hear me. And I got one good pound in before I was going to hit the rest of the time, and they opened the door, and three women about ran me over running out of the building in hysterics because this had just happened. And I was like, okay, so this is why I'm here. And, you know, I had to go actually find out what had happened. But, you know, I don't have any doubt that it was the same spirit or what have you that was, you know, aggressive with me on multiple occasions. So.
Mm-hmm. People don't realize that even though they're physically not here anymore, they can still be physical towards you.
Right.
Chris, Waverly Hills. Tell us about that.
That was the actual first film project I put together on the paranormal. And Charlie and Tina Mattingly, the owners, I had the opportunity to get to know them very well. I used to do a paranormal radio show here in Louisville, and they were guests on my program several times. And after being invited up there, naturally I was a little skeptic because Waverly had been the holy grail, so to speak, of paranormal locations, at least in this part of the country, in the Midwest. And I went in with the attitude of open mind, but you know, all the reports I've heard, some of them very dramatic, there's no way this could be true. So I got mm-hmm. to know Charlie and Tina very well and was given access to the building numerous times, several occasions by myself. And after having a couple of personal experiences there, I talked to Charlie and Tina about doing a documentary film because several networks had been out on different occasions. And I think, although with good intention, a lot of the projects may have come out to be a little bit more over the top, as Charlie and Tina would like to have seen them, because they wanted to really get the history of the building out there besides just the story of the ghost. So that's what I did. We did a film called Waverly Hills, The True Story, which outlines the entire history of the building, interviews with former patients, and, of course, we did take a team in. Prove Paranormal Researchers of Ohio Valley, the group I'm involved in. And we did a complete investigation of the location and filmed it and had a very interesting time there. And I can tell you that of all the places I've been, Waverly is probably the most active haunting that I've ever personally been involved in. And numerous times of being there, I mean, almost every time in that building, something has happened that I couldn't explain. And probably the most dramatic for me was being tapped on the shoulder when no one was around me at all. The team mm-hmm. I was with was actually on another floor. I was on the fourth floor. They were on the second and third floors. And that will wake you up very quickly. Luckily, I knew my way out of the fourth floor at that time. But on that film, I worked with another psychic by the name of Mary Lou Coy, who's in the film. She's in the group I work with, and she's a great, great lady, very good at what she does, and she does not normally channel. That is not something she does. She gives readings to people. She works with the police department on missing persons, and you know, on occasion. And we had discussed it the night of the filming that, you know, that's not what she does, but she's going to go in and see what she feels. Well, a spirit there thought differently and actually spoke through her while our cameras were rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to put probably 5 or 10 minutes of that in the film. The whole incident lasted probably 15 to 20 minutes. And after production, we were able to actually go back and verify pretty much everything she said. The lady gave her name, when she died, where she was buried, talked about the fact that they were completely self-contained because people tuning in aren't familiar with Waverly Hills. That was the tuberculosis hospital for the Midwestern part of the United States, in the southern part, from the 20s, late 20s, all the way up to like 1960, 61. And unfortunately, back then, when they didn't have a cure for tuberculosis, most of the people who came there never walked out alive.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a self-contained society. People were not allowed in there. You know, visitations were very brief, if they were allowed at all, with the sick residents. But whoever she happened to channel that night gave us information on where their farm was, which was not publicly known at that time. I mean, it was listed in the records. That's how we found it. But we were able to validate quite a bit of what Mary Lou had given us as far as information.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives a whole new spin on it. It really makes you wonder. Even one of the crew that was filming with us that night was a total skeptic. And after that incident, you know, he left and saying, you know, I might have to rethink this. Maybe there is something going on up here.
You said the lady's name was Mary Lou, who went into trance?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When she went into trance, did her eyes remain closed when she talked, or did she open them up and talk? I'm just curious.
No, her eyes were completely open. I didn't
wow.
really realize things were going on at that moment. I heard her husband was with her, and I kind of saw a couple of our other members kind of scurry into one part of the room. And we were in a location that used to be the original cafeteria at Waverly Hills. And our camera operator, he ran over real quick, and that's when I went along. And he filmed the whole incident. And her husband told me afterwards that she had been talking to him, and she had mentioned to him that, you know, someone was trying to speak through her, and she was kind of fighting it off as much as she could. She mainly does automatic writing in situations
mm-hmm.
like that. But evidently it wanted to get its voice across. It was a woman. And, you know, she was upset, this entity, that Waverly Hills was being seen as what she put as a trick-or-treat place.
Mm-hmm.
She felt, you know, it was her home. That's where she died. And that's an exact quote from what she said. And after talking with Mary Lou afterwards, obviously she was completely wiped out. That was it for the night for her.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
It's rare that happens. She had one heck of a headache afterwards. She was crying through the whole thing. And she really doesn't remember much. She says she remembers starting to go out, and then everything goes black, and then she remembers coming back in and everybody's standing around her.
When Mary Lou was channeling in her trance, could you see a different personality as she was talking?
Definitely.
Just her mannerism?
Voice, yeah, her voice completely changed. This was not her.
Mm-hmm.
This person who was talking had an extreme southern drawl, used different language, but, you know, just different ways of speaking than Mary Lou does on a normal basis. And I have known her for years.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely knew something was going on. You know, this, and she's not the type of person who would fake anything anyway. She doesn't need to. So we all knew at that point, you know, something definitely is going on here. It was kind of scary to see the whole thing at once because I was just firing questions. You know, I'm like, you know, I need to know when you died, where you're buried. You know, these things I can go verify.
Well, Chris, that was very clever of you to realize what was going on and to start asking those questions. That really it was. I applaud you for that.
Well, you have, you know, I mean, it's easy to say, well, what was this place like back then? You know, well, someone who had seen pictures, you know, way on the internet or wherever, could have easily asked, you know, answered that question. You know, I was trying to get questions answered that we could go verify and say, okay, you know, maybe something did really happen here because there's no way she could have known that ahead of time. That was the whole reason for that.
And that's great proof positive that something interesting's happening, correct?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I don't know. My mind just left. I don't know what I was about to say. Anyway, Jamie. Jamie, have you ever gone into trance?
No. I will still attach the word reluctant to that.
You're not a control freak, are you?
I am a little. In fact, you know, one of the things, you know, to illustrate my control issues with this kind of thing, I used to, as a child, astral travel, I guess, you know, I'd have some OBEs from time to time, and it would make me so angry because, you know, I would feel like I was out of control, you know, like I did not have control over everything that was happening. So, you know, now I'm in this place where I'm like, I practice it all the time because I'm going to get control of it. If it's going to happen, I'm going to be in charge. So, I'm not sure that I want to go down that path just yet. I'm still reluctant about that. So,
let me ask you, Jamie, a philosophical question. Are you ready for that?
Okay.
Okay. If you take the sum of all your experiences in the psychic medium field, if they, whoever they are, or natural law, nature, whoever or whatever is preparing you, do you think they're preparing you for a big picture, some big event, or something extraordinary? What do you think?
You know, I have actually pondered this question.
I know that. I'm psychic.
Yeah. Like, why am I able to do this? You know, like, what's the point? Because I feel like there's got to be a purpose, right? I don't know if it's leading up to some, you know, huge one event. I do feel like I found a purpose in this, a couple of them, but mainly, you know, I've found that it comes quite easily to me to cross earthbound folks over. And, you know, the questioning in my head, that why and, you know, why would I have this, a lot of that calmed down once I figured out I could do that because it was like, oh, okay, well, this is useful. But yeah, there's been other times that, you know, I've met people or I've serendipitously, you know, formed relationships that are just like, yeah, this is bigger than I get. And the truth is I still don't get it, but I do. I have that feeling from time to time that's like, what is it that I don't know yet? So I don't have an answer to that question, but I have pondered it.
Mm-hmm. But you've got that feeling that there is something, that there is a bigger picture to all this.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Chris, what do you think? I mean, being a producer and director of this, do you think there's something bigger there?
Definitely. I think there's so much more to what we see on a daily basis. As I said earlier, it's, And people who are gifted to be able to tap into that, I think that's a great thing. But I think probably maybe the long-term goal of whomever is to get everyone in tune with that. I don't know if you want to call it God or a supernatural force, whatever the case may be. Because I think there's a reason people have the ability to do it and probably a reason that other people don't.
Mm-hmm.
But there's probably something to be learned in both cases there. and people like Jamie who are able to tune in quickly to the other side and are willing to use it to help people and not for monetary gain, I think, you know, the kudos goes to those people, too. Because I know Jamie works a lot with children, too, who had the same problem that she did as a child, you know, being misunderstood. Then that's a good way to use that particular talent.
Well, now that I know that she's worked with children, that's a whole nother program we can do.
There you go, Jamie. I just got you another hour.
See,
there you go.
He got you another hour in the future. Chris, in a minute or less, plug what you need to plug. Tell us something about the future that you're doing.
Well, of course, the latest film, Spirits of Bourbon Country, which is about Bargetown, the ghost there, will be out the first part of October. You can find out more at spiritsofbourboncountry.com. And then coming next year, we're working with a gentleman by the name of Bart Nunley, who is a cryptozoologist here in Kentucky, and we're going to be doing a documentary film on the reported Spotsville Monster, a Bigfoot-type creature that's been reportedly seen for years in western Kentucky. And we're in the process of doing a field shooting right now and research on that, and hopefully that will be up sometime mid to late next year. So we're trying to stay busy.
Well, that would certainly be a great show for Doug to come back and do. Doug, are you listening to that? Yes, he's emailing. You can see that. Jamie, tell us what's going on with you in the next couple months to a year. What's down the road for you?
Well, I am working with Chris on the Spotsville Monster. And like you said, I work with kids. I have a little online community called RaisingPsychicKids.com, and it's a very close group of people who have children and want to have a free area to speak freely without a doctor telling them that their child needs to be on meds. You know, it's just a nice little supportive way for people that to have that outlet to talk about those sort of things. So I have that, and you know, I'm just going to continue to do what I do. And
you've got your blog.
Yeah, I have my blog. I've been really busy, and I haven't updated with every little thing that happens anymore. But yeah, it's there, reluctantmedium.com. So.
Excellent. I appreciate both of you being on the show this evening. It really has been delightful. I want to remind those that are listening and those in the chat room to please log on to paranexus.org, see what's going on in the paranormal field and arena. We do have an investigation, live investigation, coming up in September, Bartow, Florida, Central Florida, the old Bartow Courthouse, County Courthouse. So please log on and check that out. We'd be happy for you to come into the area and meet us. I know Doug, Grant, myself, and some of the others are going to be there. Yeah, so it'd be nice to put some faces with the names. Blog Talk is telling us that we've got 90 seconds left, and Doug is sending me some messages that I do not understand. I'm sorry, Doug. You can come on live and tell us. The presentation in Bartow is September the 24th at 7:30 to 8:00, Bartow, Florida. And then we're going to do an investigation after that. Of course, it's going to be at midnight. It is open to the public. The later investigation, they are asking $20, I believe, for that, and it's a fundraiser for the historical courthouse. Doug, John, thank you for everything, running the show. I do appreciate both of you. And everyone else out there, please enjoy the shows that we present to you, and hopefully we'll see you again next month on The Psychic Perspective. Have a great evening.